propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
David Flynn is the editor and publisher of the Watcher website, watcherwebsite.com, and also the author of just an excellent and really provocative book, Cydonia, the Secret Chronicles of Mars. David Flynn, welcome back to PID Radio.
Thanks, Derek. I'm really glad to be back.
You know what, David? We have missed you, and we've gotten so many emails from people. When's Dave Flynn coming back on? But we know you're busy.
Yeah, well, yeah, too busy, but... not too busy to talk to you guys.
Well, thanks so much.
We appreciate that. We're in the middle of a series on prophecy and wanted to dig into your area of expertise and some of the connections you've made, Dave, that place the United States into an end times context.
Well, it is pretty amazing. And the way I actually kind of stumbled into it, and it's a progression of over a couple of years of having a question and looking into it and setting the information aside and then having inspiration and coming back and seeing something that I hadn't seen before. And a couple of days ago, I was toying around with my Bible Code software. It's a real archaic version of it. It's called Torah for You. And it comes out of Israel. So I guess, you know, it's just some Hebrew speakers play on English words or something.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I put America into the program, and you know you can set up how many spaces you want this equal distant letter sequence to appear in, and I could find America over and over and over again in hundreds of places. But the place that it shows up at the least amount of skips is -17, and I thought, well, it seems like the most significant Bible codes are the ones that you have these words placed in the closest ELS, I guess, that's the short mm-hmm. for the equal letter sequence. And it appears in Daniel 3:3. And so I read this text, Daniel 3:3, where the skips is happening 17 letters apart. And it turns out that it's a part of it's a story of during the Babylonian exile for the Jews, Nebuchadnezzar had set up an obelisk, and it was gold, and he set it up in Babylon, and he has a herald say, now when you hear all this music play, the psaltery, the sackbut, the harp, the drums, everything you can think of, then everybody, all the nations and peoples and tongues need to bow down and worship this thing. And if they don't do this, then in the same hour, they're going to be thrown into the fiery furnace. And this is where this ELS of America shows up, 17 spaces. So I've always seen these things with numerical significance. And there's some opponents of the Bible code
mm-hmm.
who say, well, you know, that there's so many variances on the text and, you know, just changing one letter just distorts all, you know, all these sequences, and you're really not going to be able to pay that much attention to it. But the more I've been looking at numbers themselves and the way we actually measure things in time and space, mathematics in general, have been laid out very early in history, prehistory actually. And these things have been held sacred to especially the fraternal organizations, the fraternal sorts of occult mystery school organizations. Namely, the Freemasons, who had a huge influence in putting the architecture in Washington, D.C., and setting up dates and times for our country to be built around. Namely, like 1776 is a really good example.
Mm-hmm.
That has huge occult significance. I'll get back to that. But,
good, because I know I'll get email if you don't.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, wow, you know, here's Nebuchadnezzar having all these nations and peoples and tongues fall down to their MTV. And then you look at America, and the biggest obelisk in the world today is in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Washington Monument. And the Washington Monument was conceived something like 7 years after 1776. So that number 7 shows up again. Washington, D.C. itself is at 77 degrees longitude. Just exactly. It's perfectly on there. In fact, if you go to the Google Earth program, I don't know if you played with that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we love it.
Astounding thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually get a little cursor and you can put it on the Capitol, the Washington Capitol building, and you can get 77 degrees, 00 minutes, 33 seconds.
Oh, my goodness.
All the numbers are completely, you know.
Wow.
Amazing. What's more amazing is that was actually set up at 77 degrees before the meridian that we know of right now that's in Greenwich was actually established, which adds to the mystery even further, because if Washington was, D.C. was set up the way it is, it's exacting when it comes to being aligned on the 77th meridian. The latitude of Washington is at 35 or 38.5, which is half 77. So the whole complex is a play on this location that's, you know, 77 is twice its latitude.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, you end up with this sort of mathematical signature of where the place is. So getting back into the actual story of Nebuchadnezzar having people bow down to this obelisk. In the story, of course, Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these were Jewish guys who had ended up being exiled to Babylon. And the Babylonians had destroyed Jerusalem and the temple in 586 B.C. And then in 538 B.C., the Persians took over Babylon, and Cyrus the Great was ruling. And Cyrus actually let the Jews go back to Jerusalem and build their temple again. So you have this parentheses from 586 to 538 when the Jews were in exile, and that's the time of this actual story that you find in Daniel 3:3. Amazingly, then, if you take the actual numbers of this code where you find America in this place, Daniel 3:3, and you actually look at the number that's spacing the letters apart, 17, and then you count the actual words that have these letters that are spaced 17 letters apart, you'll find 33 Hebrew words together. And 33 times 17 gives you 561. And if you're looking at the exile of the Jews in Babylon, that puts you right in the center. It's perfectly in the center of 586 and 538 B.C.,
mm-hmm.
which to me is saying, you know, basically you're looking at the time here. You're looking at about a 24-year period from after the exile,
mm-hmm.
when Nebuchadnezzar decides to do this thing, and that's actually encoded in the code. And then you look back at America, and you look at this date that's been is so patriotic, 1776. You know.
I thought they were there for longer than 48 years, though.
They were there for 70 years. Israel had been taken out first, and then Judah later.
Mm-hmm.
And so Judah was the last one to go, and when Judah was taken out, that was in 586, and the temple was destroyed.
Right, and that was Daniel's prayer, of course. He thought the 70 years that God had said.
Yeah, yeah. So Israel and Judah were, you know, they're two different sections. They were separated in Israel at the time. And so the whole exile lasted for 70 years. But interestingly, Judah's exile lasted for 49, which is 7 times 7. And you're talking 306 biblical day years.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up, you know, you're using biblical day years to measure these things out. But there's this interplay between regular Gregorian calendar years or solar years and biblical years. And it kind of gets a little bit dicey when you're having to work on a calculator to figure out if there's any meaning here. But 49 is just 7 times 7,
mm-hmm.
again. So that number is repeated again in the actual destruction of the temples and then finally the release of the Jews from Babylon captivity to build the temple again. So the number is repeated again. So I took 1776 and I divided it by 3.3, which was kind of suggested in that place where the code shows up for America at Daniel 3, first three. That's where it starts.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, you come up with an actual date, 538. 1776 divided by 3.3 is 538, which is exactly the year that Babylon fell to the Medes and the Persians, and Cyrus the Great let the Jews go. There's more, though. If you say 1776 and you put the decimal point between 1776 and you multiply that times 33, you get 586, which was the year the temple was destroyed and the Jews went into exile in Babylon.
Oh, my goodness.
So it actually marks exactly when the exile began for Judah and ended. And so you're placed right in the center of that situation, and you're actually looking at the code pointing out the date and the time and the whole event that you're reading in the forward narrative of the Daniel 3:3. That really piqued my interest because that's, there has to be more to it, and there is.
So, we suspected as much.
Yeah, you have a. If you look at, go to some of these federal sites on the web, and you look up the Washington Monument, you find some really intriguing things, and they fit right into Daniel 3:3. It says that there, the base of the Washington Monument, there's plaques. There's 188 plaques from all nations and peoples and tongues. That's the actual word that I found used.
Mm.
And the actual building of this thing was in, I guess they built it until it was, I think it was 1884, where they had some problems finishing it, and it was only about 150 feet high, which is about a third of its total height, which they finished when the thing was completed in 1888. And this number 1888 is pretty interesting because three eights together, 888, is half 1776.
Hmm.
888 is the Greek gematria number for the name Jesus.
Right.
And we know that Jesus has two advents. He came the first time, and he's going to come the second time.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what 1776 is actually symbolizing mathematically is the second advent of the Messiah. Only if you're looking at it from a Gnostic,
mm-hmm.
sort of paternal, mystical version of Jesus, you're looking at the manifestation, at least from their version, of the bringer of light.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And Jesus to them isn't the son of Yahweh. He's the son of Lucifer, or he's Lucifer incarnate. Now that's a heavy thing to say, but if you read Pike's Morals and Dogma, he just gets down and says, Lucifer is God.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He's pretty clear on that. And
And there's a popular belief that's taking off now that Jesus was trained in the Gnostic sects over in Egypt. And that he was proclaimed to be the son of the Lightbringer.
Yeah, during the missing years.
Yeah, during the missing years.
Yeah.
And you can say almost anything you want.
Yeah. Well, he visited India and Britain and everywhere else in between.
Yeah. It's an amazing thing. If you've looked at the early starting, the beginnings of America, you find out that there's so much Freemason influence in the symbology that was put together, the dates that were set up for starting this country. And they're taken for granted because they're all parts of a conspiracy theory, which is starting to fall in disfavor in the modern secular sorts of views. There's a big reason for that, too. It's to keep the information away.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a spiritual battle going on, too, that keeps people from looking at things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Except, if, of course, they have the spirit of all truth, which we have, and you can see through it. These numbers continued, and I don't think I'll tell you too much more because you can go to my forum and you can actually look at this write-up that I did on it.
Oh, okay. And it's at watcherwebsite.com?
Yeah, and there's a link to the forum, and you just go there, and it's under serious warning, which my brother said you should have spelled it.
S-I-R-I-U-S?
Yeah. That kind of fits.
But now, where is the link for serious warning? I'm looking at your main page right now.
Yeah. It's under Watcher Forum.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
And you'll end up seeing all the equations and math, and you can pull out your calculator and follow along and see if it makes any sense.
Play along at home.
Yeah. The most amazing thing is, here you have this prophecy showing up at a certain time in history when the Jews were in exile in Babylon. And it actually is mathematically encoded in the Bible code in Daniel 3:3. But then in text, there's also some interesting things, too, that I don't think people have realized. The actual penalty for not falling down and worshiping Nebuchadnezzar's obelisk was to be thrown in the fiery furnace.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that Cyrus the Great, who conquered Babylon in one night, his name, Cyrus, means possessor of the furnace. So you end up with this kind of irony of God saying, you know, sorry, the Babylonians aren't going to destroy you through fire and, you know, judgment in this way. And then a man whose name is, one who possesses the furnace comes and actually liberates the Jews.
Hmm.
His name is pronounced, I guess, in Hebrew, Koresh. Which,
David Koresh.
David Koresh.
Yeah, there's something interesting in that, too.
That's
yes.
Really creepy, considering how they all died.
Yeah, in a conflagration, in a fiery furnace, which I haven't looked into. I thought about that yesterday about 4 in the morning, so I haven't looked into it much more than...
Yeah, that's a whole other trail, especially considering that Koresh was not his given name, was it?
No, I don't believe that was his... name. I think he had taken that name.
He took that name. He was born. He was born Vernon Wayne Howell.
Huh. Well, that thickens the plot.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Make note. Go back to that later.
Well, you know, we're taught in Scripture that names they're important. In fact, when believers go to be with Christ in heaven or whatever you want to call it, when we go to our eternal life, that we are given a new name.
Well, I think that would be pretty cool. You know, I have a name right now that I think is great. I'm not sure my parents were Catholics, but they named me with some inspiration, I think, that was a little bit beyond their wisdom. And, you know, because David is a great Hebrew name.
Mm-hmm.
And although I'm not Hebrew or anything, I've looked back into my genealogy and the name Flynn. It turns out that Flynn is a strange Gaelic form of the word phoenix. And phoenix, of course, is this mystical bird that dies in the flames of its own kind of creation and is reborn again. But that comes out of this Phoenicia, the whole place where all this knowledge comes from to begin with,
mm-hmm.
Because Phoenicia, where Lebanon is now,
mm-hmm.
It was also called Canaan. And its boundaries extended, you know, all the way into Israel and up all the way north, and into Syria and all the way up to where Turkey is. And it's from there that the Genesis 6 scenario began. Especially if you look at, you know, the Book of Enoch and some extra biblical texts, it talks about the mountain that the Watchers descended on, and that's Mount Hermon, which
mm-hmm.
is right up against Phoenicia. And that's another thing, too, I find really strange, because if you look at the ancient text, hands down, you'll find that they looked at ancient Phoenicia as the origin for knowledge itself and all the systems of knowledge. People talk about Sumeria and Babylon being the origins of these things, but they worshipped this mountain, too,
mm-hmm.
as being the place where knowledge came down.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenicia or Lebanon right now is one of the least studied in archaeology and history of any country there is. And you can find places like Sidon, which is incredibly significant when it comes to Bible history, that has maybe 0.05% of the area ever excavated, and maybe only down to maybe the area of the Crusades. But underneath all this blacktop and building and all this stuff there is so much information left over from the most ancient cultures that some of the Greeks said were the progenitors of civilization. It boggles the mind how much is there and how much hasn't been uncovered. And I think part of the reason is it's part of the mystery. You're not supposed to know.
Mm-hmm.
We're not supposed to know.
Hmm.
It's part of something that's going to come out later, I think.
You know, you mentioned Mount Hermon.
Mount Hermon, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The verse that you used for the numbers that you were giving us earlier, Daniel 3:3.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the first thing I thought of when you told me that was where you found it, was Mount Hermon, because that was where the tribe of Dan was. And Mount Hermon sits on 33 latitude.
Yes, it does. And if you're looking at the way the Templars actually measured longitude, it sits on 33 longitude.
Because they went through Paris.
Yeah, the Paris Meridian.
Hmm.
That's a strange thing, because Mount Hermon's called Mount Seir. And it's the root where you get the word Sirius. And in Egypt, the symbol for Sirius in architecture was obelisk. Which, of course, is in Washington, D.C. And so the thing that you showed me about Orion being rising over Washington, D.C., and the actual the pointer stars in the belt of Orion actually having the same angle as, I think it's Pennsylvania Boulevard.
Pennsylvania Avenue. As Sirius actually rises, and I think it's, if I remember correctly, it's on August 15th, which is the Assumption of Mary Day.
Mm-hmm. It makes a ton of sense, mm-hmm. because in the whole idea of what this obelisk represents in Sirius as a star being represented by this architectural point, it's actually a phallic symbol for the Egyptians.
Yeah.
It goes all the way back to the story of Osiris and Isis, and Osiris being destroyed by his evil brother Set and cut up into pieces. I was saying earlier that that Sirius is actually seer. The actual word seer is a root that's used for the mount that the watchers descended on Mount Hermon. It's called Mount Seir or Mount Sirion.
Mm-hmm. Hence the nation Syria.
Yeah, and Lebanon itself is a kind of a Semitic word. This means whiteness, and that's another name for the mountain Lebanon, because it's white when it's the snow on it, and it's the highest point in the area. And so these different countries, even Jordan, the headwaters of Jordan come down from Syria. Yardan means to descend.
Mm-hmm.
Yardane, actually. Yared means to descend.
Mm-hmm.
Yardan means the place of descent. So it's harkening back to the Watchers, that whole Genesis 6 scenario.
What was the root word you used there again?
You have
Yared
or Yared in Hebrew, which means to descend, and Yardan or Yardane, I guess, would be the place of descent.
Well, I was just curious, because the grandson of Cain, the biblical Cain, was Irad, I-R-A-D, and I'm wondering if there's any connection.
It actually in the book of Jasher, I think it says, and his name was Yared because it was in his year that the angels descended.
Right. But again, going back to Cain, who is his grandson, Cain went to the land of Nod, built a city for his son. His son's name was Enoch, but his grandson, Enoch's son, was named Irad, spelled I-R-A-D in the Bible, which lent its name to the city, Eridu, which was the location of that temple of Enki, the god of the world that we talked about with Beth Vey, and the place where he believes the literal stargate or the opening to the abyss, the literal abyss of Revelation 9 is located.
That's intriguing, because in my book in Sidonia, I was talking about the gods of Sumeria, En and Ki. So putting them together is a cognate of two different gods themselves. And I think En is the god of heaven and Ki is the god of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this idea of heaven and earth being united in some way.
As above, so below.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Sirius is that key to that maxim, as above, so below, or uniting heaven with earth, or having heaven and earth connect. And also, it also lends some insight to this idea that the architectural symbol for Sirius would be phallic, because in the story in Isis and Osiris, this key that was lost, the part of Osiris that was never lost, which was lost, was never found, is this used as a symbol, the actual obelisk is used for the symbol of that, and every place, at least in the narrative of the story, that people would try to find Osiris's body, and they would find a part, they would leave an obelisk to say, you know, look for the last piece, because if you can find that, mm-hmm. you'll find the lost knowledge, you'll find the lost word, you'll find the thing that will bring back unity and harmony with the earth, you'll find a way to cause the earth to be ruled globally, basically,
mm-hmm.
right,
and ruled by these forces that came down at one time and actually did have a global sort of system of government and were destroyed. So it all connects to the obelisk. It all connects to this obelisk that's Sirius, and it also fits into time and space and the way we measure things. Because I believe that Sirius is the zero meridian of the heavens. And in astrology and in astronomy, we look at the first degree of Aries as being the zero meridian of the heavens. And the only reason for that is because in Greek times, when the sun would rise in March 21st in the spring equinox, which was when they began their year, the sun used to be rising in the first degree of Aries. That doesn't make much sense because that constantly is moving. You know, the sun's moving along the ecliptic every year, fractions of degrees. I guess 72 years, it moves 1 degree. But now the sun rises a little bit after Pisces. In fact, it's pretty close to Aquarius.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't make sense to say that's where the zero meridian is because it's moving. The one place in the heavens that doesn't move, relatively speaking, I guess the stars do move, but the place that's still intact as it was when you look back at the ancient Egyptian history, Sirius is still there. It's still the brightest star in the northern hemisphere, and that was the zero meridian for the Egyptians and the Sumerians and the early people in Phoenicia as well. The Phoenicians were renowned, and the Phoenicians, you know, those who lived at the foot of Mount Hermon, they were renowned as seafarers and navigators. And the reason they were so good at this is because, of course, they inherited this heavenly knowledge from these angelic beings, the Bnei Elohim. At the same time, though, they would use Sirius as a star that would guide them. And even later, the Greeks, there's even a story in the book of Acts that talks about Paul riding in a ship that had the Dioscuri, or Castor and Pollux, the two symbols of Gemini. On the ship's head. Well, Castor and Pollux, Gemini, are actually right in the same meridian as Sirius is. They are the Decan. Sirius is a Decan. I guess Canis Major is a Decan of Gemini. The word Decan, of course, is like a deck of a ship. You have like layers of stars, just like you have layers of decks on a ship. And so it all comes together there. So they would measure where they were according to actually having a catalog of where Sirius was every day of the year, just like we do nowadays. At a solar transit, we actually, on the meridian and Greenwich, take readings of the star Sirius at midnight every day and put it in a little log so that when you go out on the ocean and you have a clock that's pretty accurate, you can find exactly where you are in longitude by finding out what the time is in Greenwich Mean Time and where Sirius is on the horizon, because you can adjust the degrees for where you are according to this catalog. That's something that's incredibly ancient and it's incredibly profound, because Sirius is pointing out time. And if you're going to point out time on the Earth, if you have a meridian in heaven, it's important to establish the meridian on the Earth, the zero meridian too.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds a little bit obscure, a little esoteric, but most people use this every day without actually realizing it. And the way we actually use time is something that was, it's what the Egyptians did with time. The whole idea of hour comes from the word Horus. And the Greeks inherited this word from the Egyptians, ora and oreos and these things, which are been translated later into the words for heaven. The word for hour, the word for mountain, and also the word for a tail, which is a strange thing, but that's something I was looking into, too, when it comes to these cryptograms that you might be able to find in Revelation, which actually point time out and the sequencing, I think, of the end time events.
Okay, so we get back into prophecy here and how all of this relates back to where we're going. So if this is pointing out time, then I guess I've got a couple of questions. Where does that lead, and how does the symbology built into Washington, D.C. and other American cities, as we've heard other interviews talking about how Indianapolis is laid out according to a certain, you know, way, you know, with certain symbols built into it too, and other American cities as well. How does all that fit together?
Well, getting back to 1776, because that's a pretty hallmark date for America.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
That's half 888, which is Jesus' name in Greek. You know, the letters in Greek are also numbered. Same thing with the Hebrew letters. But a strange thing happens when you look at 666. We'll talk about Revelation again. Why the number 666? And there's a lot of information on that. You can go back hundreds of years and find out, well, it's the number of a man, and it's the number of his name, and people try to figure out, okay, well, who is it? Was it Nero? Was it Henry Kissinger? Is it Omar Sadat? You know, they're trying to figure it out. Well, it's pretty interesting that you have this number of a name, but you also can use this number mathematically. I mean, it's a number. Why not? And so I have. And if you take 666 times 6, kind of repeats the whole motif, you come up with a number that if you add it to 1776 gives you the Hebrew calendar year for the year 2012. That's 5772.
Oh, my, that's interesting.
So 5772 minus 666 times 6 gives you 1776.
Mm-hmm.
1776 is pretty versatile. You can take the number 3, which is like the governmental perfection number. We have like 12 members of a jury, 12 numbers in our clock.
9 justices on the Supreme Court.
Yeah. So you have 12, and you take that times 333, which is this penultimate number that the Freemasons use, 33 and a third, 333. It's always a symbol that you find in the hierarchy as being the highest established rank that they can attain. 12 times 333 plus 1776 gives you that Hebrew date again, 5772, which is 2012.
Hmm.
So then I took that number from the Hebrew date, or the Jewish date on their calendar, 5772, and you take the longitude of Washington, D.C., which is 77, and you multiply it, and you get 444,444. If you take that same number, 5772, times the latitude of Washington, D.C., the average, 38.5, you get 222,222. So you're getting this repetition of a number. It doesn't look like it's by chance. When you find patterns that repeat themselves, it's a demonstration of order and intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So adding, you know, 444,444 plus 222,222, you get 666,666.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also a mathematical suggestion of the coming year, 2007, and that's used by taking the longitude of Washington, D.C., which is 77, 3 times, plus 1776, that gives you 2007. If you take the latitude, 38.5, times 6, plus 1776, that gives you 2007 also. And if you take the number 33 times 7, plus 1776, that gives you 2007. So you can take these series of numbers that have been embedded in Washington, D.C., and have been embedded in Freemasonry for hundreds of years, and the Freemasons will say thousands of years, you'll actually come up with a number that repeats itself over and over again. It's interesting, too, that you find 7 times, or 3 times 77, that actually is 231 years. That's the distance between 1776 and 2007. That's 231 years. Also happens to be how the Hebrew year will be slower by one day from the Gregorian calendar. So if you go 231 years for both calendars, the Hebrew year will move 1 year off every time. So it's marking out the Hebrew calendar too. So you're actually seeing there's an alignment and there's agreement between both calendars. The mathematics are really sophisticated, and it took me a while to actually pick these things out of it. But once they started showing up, especially with the keys that I found in the America prophecy in Daniel 3:3, they just laid out in front of me one after the other.
This is amazing. And, you know, you and I were talking, as well as Derek, between the recordings of this interview. We took a little break, and we talked about the cult of Sirius that seems to have taken hold in the military and industrial arms of our government, and perhaps even in the judicial and executive mm-hmm. arms of our government. With regard to Sirius, I sent you a link earlier that you and I just discussed briefly, and I'm just kind of curious to get your take on the air, so to speak. If you look at the layout of the streets of Washington, D.C., Pierre L'Enfant was adamant about the angle of Pennsylvania Avenue with respect to the center of the town. He was adamant about it. It had to be exactly, you know, I can't remember what it was. I don't have it in front of me, 28 degrees or something like that. But when you take a look at that avenue, it, at a certain time of the year, it leads right to the rising of Sirius.
It makes sense. It's the focus of everything, basically, mm-hmm. Of why America became America. If you read Francis Bacon's account of the New Atlantis, which is a symbol for America, mm-hmm. he's talking about bringing together a culture that will reinstitute the lost Atlantis. Of course, Atlantis was completely destroyed, but that was a price they paid for usurping the heavenly knowledge and that sort of thing. But basically, if you can remember that the obelisk symbolizes Sirius, and that Sirius is everything when it comes to time and space and the link between heaven and earth, then when you look at the prophecy of Daniel talking about the Antichrist coming and link that up to the idea that 1776 is actually a symbol of the first advent and the second advent of Christ,
mm-hmm.
if they're trying to bring in the second advent of Christ, but the Gnostic Christ, the Illuminator Christ, the one who is actually Lucifer,
mm-hmm.
then the picture starts clarifying a bit. Daniel, I think it's Daniel 11, verse 31, I think. He says, and he shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, I guess that's the temple of Jerusalem, and he shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that makes desolate. And then that's again mentioned in Revelation. It's interesting because they're talking about this Antichrist that comes, and then he moves into the temple, and this is at the end of days.
In fact, Jesus mentioned that during the Olivet Discourse also.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
Yeah, and so it's repeated in Revelation 13, and it talks about the image of the beast, and the image speaks, and it causes many who would not worship the image to be killed. Then you go to Daniel 3:3, and it says, in Daniel 3, I guess, is verse 6, and those who don't fall down and worship this at the same hour will be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. So, you're looking at this kind of crossover from the New Testament to the Old Testament, and the story of Daniel having to worship, or at least the Jews having to worship, this obelisk, which symbolizes Sirius, and the Antichrist causing, or the false prophet who causes this beast to come alive, that says, this image of the beast that comes alive and says, you know, everybody has to worship the beast or they'll be killed. You're seeing the same motif repeated again.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about a future event that is focused on the Temple of Jerusalem, and an event that is necessary if the world is going to be globalized again and is going to be ruled under the watchers once again. Just like Jesus was saying, at the days before Noah entered the ark, the same will be before he comes again. So you have the heavens connecting with the earth, which Sirius points out again. And you have this hierarchy from above ruling those underneath. And it's a strange thing, too, because this kind of falls on dull ears when it comes to the Christian community sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
very much so.
It's strange, too, because when you talk about hell coming down to earth, basically, And they say, well, what are you talking about? I mean, you know, hell's in the, it's a subterranean abyss, or Lake of Fire isn't, you know,
or it's
into
in,
it yet, or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Or it's just a metaphor for being separated from God.
Yeah, and if they read their Bibles, they could check out, you know, many places in the New Testament that the hierarchy of the spiritual forces of evil that manifest on this planet live in the air around the earth, in the space around the earth, principalities and, you know, powers in high places.
Oh, that was just Paul. He didn't know what he was talking about.
Well, this hierarchy is in rulership. There's archons that are placed over the earth. There's actually an archon, I guess the Greek for this is Cosmocrator, this powerful angelic being that's seated in power over where Persia is. And Daniel had some incredible events happen to him. And I go back to Daniel a lot because the America Code is found in Daniel 3:3, and so then look at that certain point in history, and you find all these parallels with what's happening now. So you have Daniel, he's in Iraq, basically, and he starts praying because he's in exile, and he asks God, you know, bring us out of exile, let us build the temple again. And then 21 days later, he's met by an angel. An angel says, well, I came the second you started praying, but it took me 21 days because Michael had to wrestle with the Prince of Persia. Mm-hmm. And the Prince of Persia is still there. Do you know that during Operation Desert Storm, I think, it was the last incursion into Iraq when we actually went in and took out Saddam Hussein. The ground war lasted exactly 21 days from crossing the border from Kuwait into Iraq, and that fall of the statue of Saddam Hussein, exactly 21 days.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that.
Especially because they really had to make a dash in order to get to Baghdad so quickly and put an end to it within 21 days.
And as you were saying, there seems to be strange rituals being performed at the behest of, I guess his name is Aquino.
Michael Aquino. The head of the Temple of Set. Now, he didn't perform the rituals in Babylon, but he definitely is part of this whole cult.
Well, yeah, his connection is that he is the head of the Temple of Set. His Temple of Set, of course, is an offshoot of Anton LaVey's Church of Satan. LaVey kicked him out because apparently Aquino took things a little more seriously than LaVey, who was more of a showman than a true believer. Set was a lieutenant colonel. He is now retired. Military intelligence, retired. And yet, despite his very public pronouncements that he was a Satanist, he never lost his top secret security clearance inside the U.S. military. Nor did the accusations of some activities that we won't go into here, some very public and very disturbing accusations, affect his security clearance. But he is a follower of Satan, self-professed. Has named his temple after the evil brother of Osiris, and his fascination with Nazi occultism and lore has taken him back to the very castle where Heinrich Himmler performed his workings to try to infuse the Nazi party with supernatural powers. In effect, Aquino performed a similar ritual there.
Well, I think it could be said that he's trying to open up a gateway.
That's possible. I mean, that's certainly one interpretation of his actions. So the question, though, is then if Aquino, who is very public about what he believes and what he does, seems to be well connected within the United States military intelligence community, how far do his connections run? Are there others there? And there are some indications. Researcher Jim Keith has indicated that there are others in the military that are worshippers of Sirius, and that there, again, there's this importance of the star Sirius, which, as you said, David, points back to the ancient Near East. And that's what leads us back to Babylon in the recent story, that something interesting was happening in the sands around ancient Babylon, the site of ancient Babylon. So the question then for us is, where does all this lead? Where is it going?
Well, it is pretty clear if you look at what Freemasons worship and the architecture that they hold in the highest esteem. Freemasons who actually began this country are still influencing this country in what's happening. They haven't gone away. They've gone a little bit underground. But they're counting on the ignorance of the masses to never, you know, be exposed. And basically, the whole idea of Freemasonry is to couch truths, or at least facts, I guess, they're their truths, and Gnostic truths, in symbol and riddle. And they talk about the Temple of Solomon over and over and over again. But they don't hold Solomon in such high esteem as they hold a Phoenician named Hiram Abiff in the highest esteem. And Hiram is actually found in you can find him in 2 Kings, as an artificer, actual builder of the temple, and he was highly skilled. But the name Abiff never actually shows up in the Bible. You can find the word Abib, though, in Coptic, and it is the name of their serpent, a snake. And this is another weird play on words, because Set, of course, is he's characterized both as this strange sort of dog thing and also a serpent, too.
Mm-hmm.
And Akino, being the high priest of the temple of Set, is talking about the temple of Solomon and saying the serpent belongs to that temple. It's his temple. It's not God's temple. It's the serpent's temple. Here's another weird play on the words, too, because this is all part of this Masonic imagery and symbol that's hidden from the unwashed masses. And they really do look at with disdain at people who don't understand these things, because they believe that that's their lot in life. They're not supposed to understand, and so they're supposed to be ruled. It's a Platonic idea. Well, I mean, the Aristotelian idea, this idea that there's some people who are put on earth to rule the other ones. But anyway, they look at the name Levi, which was the tribe, the priest tribe, the priest class. They were the ones that could minister in the temple. Levi means to be joined, or to be connected.
Mm-hmm.
There's another word in the Old Testament. You'll find it in Isaiah, and you also find it in Job, Leviathan. Leviathan is a connection of the word Levi and Tanin in Hebrew. Tanin means serpent, long snake-like thing.
Mm.
And Levi means connected serpent. So from that example, they've taken this idea of a connected serpent, which is a snake that's biting its tail.
The Ouroboros.
The Ouroboros. They realize that that's a symbol of time. It's been an occult figure and a Masonic symbol for hundreds of years. And they use it openly. They never, you know, explain it. But that's a symbol of what they say is the priest class of the temple. So the name Set's a serpent, Leviathan's a serpent, connected to the priest class of Israel. This whole idea that the temple of Jerusalem is important to the Masons has been from the very beginning, and it still is today. And then you go back to Iraq, where we are right now. You see, there's a connection between when the Babylonians had the Jews in exile in Iraq, and where now we are. We're having a kind of a recapitulation of events. It's this kind of a ellipsis of prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
When Daniel was in Iraq, when Daniel was in Babylon, he actually witnessed the fall of Babylon the same night the writing on the wall occurred. And then one night, Darius the Mede went underneath the great walls of Babylon, mm-hmm. by blocking water off through an aqueduct, and he came up and took over the city, and Nebuchadnezzar was dead the same night he had the writing on the wall read to him by Daniel. And Cyrus, of course, his name means he who possesses the furnace. He let the Jews go back and build the temple in the same year, or maybe the year after that. I mean, it might have been the year after that. But mm-hmm. basically, you start from 538 BC, and the Jews were let out of Babylon to build their temple.
Mm-hmm.
Now you go fast forward to our year, and you have Americans in Iraq, and you have a Persian, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, I think is his name,
mm-hmm.
and he's threatening Israel, and he's threatening America, who are in Iraq right now. And the majority of our force and our power as a nation is stuck in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And he's threatening us with a furnace, a fiery judgment, mm-hmm. Nuclear weapons. And right now there's saber rattling going between us and he, and there's really a kind of a scary sort of future when it comes to our interactions with Persia. However, that's what it's all about, because we can't get the temple built as, well, the occult fraternities can't achieve the highest goal that they've been looking for until they actually have the sacrifices performed and the rituals performed and the same scenarios as in ancient times, because there's nothing new under the sun. And they believe the Bible very, very ardently. They study the Bible. The highest ranking Freemasons are incredible, you know, in their scholarship. The only thing that's different between them and Christians is that they think that Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, is jealous and evil, mm-hmm. and a usurper of the true God, which is Lucifer, the God of light, the knowledge bringer, the one who's going to teach men to become gods in their own right. Mm-hmm. They're looking for immortality, and they believe they can find immortality by getting to that point in time in the future, the very near future, I believe, where the temple can be rebuilt again, because they realize that's the foci of cosmic power, the foci of they actually can see what Seth's trying to do, what Lucifer's trying to do. He's trying to establish himself in the temple, and they're going to help him do it. And to get there, they have to have a conflagration. They have to have it in the same manner as ancient history had met it out. And they're going to probably pull it off. So the war in Iraq isn't about oil. It's a means to an end.
Mm-hmm.
It's about control. It's about globalism. I'm going to have to be a little bit careful. they know where I live, you know.
They know where we live.
Yeah.
Well, in the couple minutes that we have left, David, can you just tell us what you think is next on the timetable?
Well, I was looking at my watch.
And, a nap is next. We're going to take a little nap, and then we're going to have a little snack.
No, watch your website. Yeah, well, you know, it's so strange. These things are right under our noses. It's knowledge hidden in plain sight. That's the Hermetic tradition. Knowledge is hidden in plain sight. And Lucifer, the Enlightened One, according to the Manly P. Hall and others, he says that when you open your mind to Lucifer, the seething powers of his understanding come through you, and you can see all. Well, I believe that they really do experience that. However, we have the spirit of discernment and truth, and we can see through their lies, and we can still see all these things that they see,
mm-hmm.
only we can see the end of the full picture. But mm-hmm. anyway, the watch is a huge thing. We count our days in hours. It goes all the way back to Horus, this idea of the sun. The solar disk was called Horus, being reborn and then dying and being reborn, that sort of thing. So they would measure the day by portioning out how many hours equally the sun would move across the sky. So an hour is an ancient thing. And an hour is measured in, of course, 60 minutes. When you look at your digital clock, you don't see 60 minutes on it. You say 59, and then it switches over to 00.
Right.
So if you're going to actually figure out what a third of an hour is, which would be 33% of an hour, you would have to do an equation which would be just 59 times 0.33. And 59.33 is 1947.
The year of the Roswell crash.
The year of the Roswell crash. However, if you're actually talking about a calendar, let's say we're talking about a third of years, for example. Let's say we're talking about when our calendar began. In the year of our Lord, which would be 1 AD, and you count forward a third using this idea that, you know, an hour has 59 minutes, you know, times a third, you would end up at 1948, which is the rebirth of Israel.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 33 is, you can go from 33 to 34, and you can have the fullness of 33. So 33.999999 would be like the last equation you could actually try to find out, well, what's the full extent of this number 33, or a third of an hour, when it comes to, say, calendar years. 0.34 times 59 gives you the year 2006. Mm. So we're ending up in a point, at least when it comes to these numbers, that are significant. And at least on this page, I've put up quite a bit about all these corresponding numbers and how they interact and how they fit into prophecy. But it looks like we have 2006, 2007 being highly significant. because, of course, you know, the 6 years between here and 2012, that shows up over and over again. The Ouroboros that I was talking about, Leviathan, points out the year 2012 in a certain way that I might not be able to get into quick enough, but it's basically aligned so that when we have the winter solstice in 2012, the sun will rise absolutely perfect in the center of the galaxy, which the Milky Way is the Ouroboros. If you look at it in a really nice clear night, you look at galactic central point, it looks like a snake biting its tail.
You've got a perfect picture of that on your website, watchyourwebsite.com.
Yes, this is the biggest timekeeper of all. It's the biggest thing that we can see, and that's why in Job it talks about, you know, he's the greatest animal, Leviathan, the greatest animal in, you know, under heaven, or anything that they can actually think of. It was a symbolic idea. He wasn't actually a real life-breathing creature. He was the Milky Way. And the Milky Way exists outside, you know, the biggest thing we can see. We can't really see any other galaxies unless we're looking through, you know, the Hubble telescope. It's really the biggest thing we can see. And it actually aligns on December 21st, 2012, so that the sun rises right in its mouth. At the same time, the rest of it, the rest of the galaxy, is aligned on the horizon of the Earth, 360 degrees around. So it looks like the Earth is rising out of a starry ocean. And that's interesting because the Egyptians talk about exactly the same sort of scenario when the primordial mound rose out of the celestial sea or the celestial ocean. And it's basically heaven being connected with the earth. So Sirius being the prime meridian of the heavens actually gives us an idea of how this whole system works, because you have to talk about precession and how long that works and where we are in relationship to it. It gets to kind of be a little bit complicated. But
well, you explain these things in your book, Cydonia, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll point out
the
year 2012.
Yeah. We'd love to continue exploring this, but I see we talked for, approximately 33 minutes here. And we do need to close for this time. Dave, this is just mind-expanding stuff, and the time has gone by much too quickly.
I do need a nap now.
Or some Krispy Kremes.
Krispy Kremes.
Yeah, well, I'll take that over a nap.
Dave, come on over to the bunker. We'll serve him up with some coffee. Well, David, thank you so much for joining us. We will have you back.
I look forward to it, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much,
all right, David. Flynn and the Watcher website, make sure you stop by and check it out. Thank you for being our guest again on PID Radio.
Thank you.
Cutting edge news and analysis on demand. This is PID Radio.
They're coming from the darkness. Over 6,000 years ago, the citizens of Mesopotamia encountered them.
Down through time, tens of thousands of people on every continent of the world have etched their likeness on the walls of caves, chiseled statues of them from solid stone, and prayed prayers to their highest gods to be delivered from them.
But prophecy says they will return. And at a time when Babylon, modern Iraq, and Iran is invaded and destroyed. This spring, exclusively from RaidersNewsUpdate.com, we'll tell you what you need to know about them. In the book-length ebook, Stargates, Ancient Rituals, and Those Invited Through the Portal.
Catherine Adamson thought she was going back to her quiet hometown of Eden, Indiana, to settle the affairs of her late Aunt Celeste. Instead, she discovers that Eden has literally gone to hell. Two high school students have disappeared, leaving behind only a running car and a bloody shoe. Strange lights have appeared over the town, and the fields of a local farm are marked with blackened circles. Eden County Hospital reports record births, incredibly large babies joining the ranks of a growing number of giants. Many of Eden's leading citizens have been hiding evil secrets, but their behavior has been closely watched by the mysterious Dr. Apollo Bell, head of the Mount Hermon Institute. All of Eden is a war camp, and citizens must choose sides in an eternal battle. Catherine is reunited with her old flame, Joshua Carpenter, the publisher of the Eden Chronicle, and they quickly learn their strongest ally may be John Thundercloud, a legless old Winnebago Indian who spends his days writing line after line in a library full of tattered diaries. It's Winds of Evil by Sharon K. Gilbert, book one of the Laodicea Chronicles. Available now online and at bookstores everywhere.